I think the quality of our conflicts often determines to a large extent what the quality of our partnerships are. So the way we do conflict is really critical in terms of the health of our relationships.
Welcome to The Art of We, the podcast where we explore how committed partnerships can be potent vehicles for fully delivering our gifts to the world. Hi, I'm Krista Vanderveer, a seasoned consultant and executive coach.
And I'm Dr. Will Vanderveer, a leader and educator in integrative mental health and wellness. As husband and wife and business partners, we keep learning that the key to maximizing our authenticity and impact in the world lies inside the health, security, and depth of our relationship.
On this show, we'll pull back the curtains to share lessons, insights, and practices from our own marriage and professional careers that help us thrive. If you're a leader, founder, or overachiever, and you want to leverage your relationships for personal and collective growth, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the Art of We podcast. This is episode 80, and we are going to get into discussing our thoughts about how to work with, address, stop when there's way too much processing going on inside of a partnership and or way too much arguing going on. I'm excited to have this conversation because I feel like it can be easy to get stuck here at times in our relationships. And we'll go about doing this by sharing some thoughts that we have about how to get out of the cycling of rupturing and arguing and processing, and also share some of our own personal experiences around these things.
Sounds good. We've both been in places like this and have learned a lot about navigating this territory. We don't have all the answers, but we can share our own experience for sure.
What I can say is it's super painful for both people. It's just like grinding at times. It feels like it's grinding and you can't get anywhere. And no matter what you're doing, it doesn't seem to be sticking or working, and it can be really frustrating. So I think fortunately, let me know if you think differently, Will, but by the time we came together, we had more skills and tools in our fanny packs.
Fanny packs. Nice.
To not get super stuck in any of these for a long period of time. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. I think the track record of our relationship supports that point of view, that we haven't tended to get stuck very often in the time that we've been together. So for sure.
I think at times we've gotten stuck around certain topics that we have to put down and revisit and put down and revisit. But in terms of living day in, day out, where like the majority of our relating is rupturing, doesn't feel like, fortunately, that's happened for us.
For sure.
But it has happened for me in other relationships, and particularly in ones looking back that I feel like there was a certain level of what seemed like trauma in the field between us, where one of us could maybe pop out of the painful cycle of overprocessing or rupturing, but for whatever reason, the other one of us couldn't pop out of that cycle. And so rupture was happening a lot, and we couldn't, no matter what kind of skills and tools we had, we couldn't actually work through what needed to be worked through because we didn't know what we needed. But looking back, I think there was actually some trauma in there.
What were some of the things that you tried in those situations?
We tried couples therapy. A little bit of it. We tried bringing forward advanced communication skills. I mean, it was a lot of talking, you know, it was a lot of talking. We brought in friends, but ultimately, I think that one or both of us had particular types of wounding that kept getting reopened and re-triggered. And we didn't have the tools back then, such as somatic psychotherapy or potentially even psychedelics, to help us break through the trauma pattern.
Sounds really painful.
Yeah, it was super painful. So what we want to provide today is, given some of our histories, and I want to hear a little bit about your background here, Will, too. We want to provide some tools that we know have worked for us between you and me when we've gotten stuck, and also probably could have worked when we were in other relationships. What is your history around over-processing or over-rupturing or anything like that with past relationships?
Well, I've spoken on this show in previous episodes about a 20-year relationship I was in before you and I met. And in that dynamic, we had a different kind of problem we certainly had fights that, you know, that were intense, but like any couple would have, but we were practicing a lot of Buddhist meditation and we had a Buddhist couple therapist, and most of what we were practicing to try to move through these snags that we would get into was more self-regulation or more internal regulation, which is a wonderful thing to practice, but it's not enough, you know. And one of the things that you and I really stand for is standing for our own self-regulation, but also standing for regulating each other.
Co-regulation.
So the regulating each other piece wasn't part of that relationship very much.
Did the self-regulation, like, so basically what you would do is you would go away from each other. And when we mean regulation, it's like basically calming down our nervous systems so we're not as hijacked or triggered or reactive. So you would go apart from each other and work on your own nervous system. And then when you came back together, did you address the topic again, or was it just like off the table, or what happened then?
We weren't very good at finishing difficult conversations. So this pattern of going away from each other and self-regulating, for me, it was usually a trail run or a mountain bike ride, or sometimes I would go and meditate. But that pattern, over time, it felt like a patch that wasn't actually fixing our core problem with each other. And I knew that because the evidence was that we kept getting into the same snag over and over again, and we couldn't seem to get through it.
Well, it seems that this idea of taking a break from conversations when we're not getting somewhere is a good idea. Like going for a trail run and going for a bike ride. But what seemed like was missing in your previous partnership was the agreement to finish the conversation and come back together and resolve it and repair the rupture.
We made a lot of attempts to do that, but I don't think we ever really got to the bottom of it. There was just a really different set of desires there between me and my partner.
I think that one of our strengths and the reason why we haven't necessarily got into a lot of over-processing, over-arguing, is because of the agreements that we have in place around how we're doing relationship. And if you're new to this podcast, what you probably want to know is that we have 24 relational agreements that we turned into vows. And if you're interested, you can go to our website, which we'll share later, and get our top 10 agreements. But one of them is to stay in the conversation, which to us means that the conversation isn't finished until we're fully repaired. And so that doesn't mean that we have to do it all at once, but there is a security in the partnership when we know, okay, we're going to make it through this conversation. We don't know the outcome, of course, but we're going to make it through and we're going to fully repair. That in the times when heavy processing is happening or arguing is happening, that can add a level of security to the partnership.
Absolutely. It's key for us. And it's a big difference from what was happening in my life before I met you. So I think what I'm hearing is, you know, go take space, take time to find your center, find your breath. Practicing somatic awareness is another piece. We could talk about other things that can happen when you take space that we found super useful. But then it's like in support of this secure functioning, secure connection, it's like promising or committing to coming back to finish the difficult conversation.
I didn't have that commitment before you. And I was always kind of left, you know, when we would take space, I was left with a fear of the partner not being able to come back or not coming back, or some level of younger parts of me coming forward and getting very scared. And when there's a we that doesn't have the same kind of security and regulation tools that we have, and there's this over-arguing or over-processing, it can be a very scary, dysregulating situation. And when we're dysregulated and scared, it's really hard to access our adult selves, so to speak. The adult parts of us who have, like you said, like somatic bodily awareness, what's happening for us, we can access the bigger vision, the bigger commitment, the tools we have, and all that.
Yeah, there's a frame in psychotherapy that I think might be useful here that I'll just speak for a minute about is witnessing awareness. So when you get hijacked by your emotions, you sometimes forget that you do under more relaxed circumstances, more well-resourced circumstances, you have a part of you that witnesses the whole process of your emotional turmoil that is happening, right? When we forget that we have a witness, one of our other beloved mentors, Dick Schwartz from Internal Family Systems, we've talked about him a lot. He would say you get hijacked or blended with your younger, emotional, injured, whatever, traumatized part. So what we're trying to build in our muscle of self-awareness is the capacity to not get hijacked by our emotional ups and downs, because we do have that. It reminds me of that animated movie, might have been a Disney movie. I don't remember who made it, but it's called Inside Out. It came out a few years ago, and it's a beautiful, actually pretty research-based way of describing what happens inside of your nervous system when you get lost in your emotions. And so it becomes really difficult to show up with your best foot forward if you're hijacked by your emotions.
Oh, so, man, it's so hard.
It sounds like 101. It sounds super basic, but the fact is it is incredibly hard to earn the black belt. That what I'm talking about by black belt is your capacity to stand in the storm of your emotions and remain in access to your witnessing presence.
One of the tools that we use that's related to this is, who can be the adult in this moment? Play a game.
Yeah.
It's not very fun in the moment, but it's basically, if we're both triggered and we're both hijacked, but one of us is a little bit less hijacked than the other person, then we like to identify who can actually be the adult, the person who can hold more of that witnessing consciousness and access the tools and skills and listening that we need in that moment. And whoever that person is, it takes a really committed and fierce ability to be able to be like, okay, I'm actually going to set aside my reactivity, all the things that my ego is telling me all about right now, all the ways that I'm right and you're wrong. I'm actually going to set that aside. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to show up here in this moment for Will. That takes a lot of strength in my experience. And we're continually working that muscle between you and I when we get hijacked together. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Again, easier said than done. That's the caveat here. But if you think about it, it's an incredibly rich opportunity to show up for your beloved partner when they're insane. You know, they've lost their sanity temporarily. And what unfortunately often happens is we go into anger or frustration or fear or something when our partner enters a state of temporary insanity, rather than showing up with compassion and strength and care and just being there and trusting. And maybe this is part of it, is like developing through repetition over time the trust that if you do show up as the adult, not only is your partner going to reciprocate, they're going to show up for you, but trusting that your partner's state is temporary, that they haven't become some terrible monster that's going to hurt you in your younger perspective, right? So it's like, who, when the momentum is pulling our we off a cliff, like who has the strength to hold on to the tree and say, okay, we're not going there. You know, I love you and we're not going there.
Totally. So well said. And we have a whole other handful of ideas about how to try to stop the rupture cycle or the arguing cycle in its tracks. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll share more. We'll be right back. We hope you're enjoying this episode. I want to take a quick break to let you know about a gift we created for you and your partner. We compiled our top 10 relationship agreements, agreements that have been so powerful in supporting the success of our partnership that we even turned them into our wedding vows. These agreements help us stay connected, growing, and thriving as a couple, and they've been critical to help us create a kind of we that's way beyond what we've ever experienced before. You can download this free gift at KristaVanderveer.com. That's KristaVanderveer.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, it would be so meaningful to us if you left us a rating and review. Not only does it help others find us, but it gives us critical feedback on how we're doing. Thanks in advance, and now back to the episode. Welcome back. So we have a handful of different ways that we feel would be supportive for those of you who are listening and want some support with stopping these patterns of rupturing and arguing a lot. So as you probably know, if you've listened to us for a while, we're all about agreements. I mentioned that in the beginning. I just want to share a couple agreements that really help us get through these times, because when we can remember these agreements, or we can gently remind our partner of these agreements, it can really help stop the reactivity that's happening and the loopholes. So one of them is that we agree to listen generously to one another and assume positive intent. So especially the assume positive intent part here feels important when one of us is reactive, that can we step into consciousness of being like, oh, their intent here isn't to negatively impact me or come after me personally. It's like, can I actually imagine that they might have a positive intention behind their reactivity, even if it feels painful in this moment?
Right. And it might be useful if you have kids to think about the whiny, tantrumy child. And is that child trying to hurt you? Right. Is their intention to over? Is that what they're trying to do? Or are they needing something from you that you haven't figured out the right way to deliver yet?
Right. And maybe they don't even know how to articulate it, but you can help them figure that out.
Right. They might be needing a boundary. They might be needing contact or attention or care or something. They might need some kind of training to express themselves in a more productive and direct way, and so on. But if you think that their intention is to harm you, boy, you are going to have a long day. That kid is going to have a really tough go. So this is the way that we can relate to our partner when they show up as a, you know, petulant 11-year-old.
Right. Absolutely. Well said. And another agreement that we have that's relevant here is that we agree to protect each other in public or private, even from ourselves. So that even from ourselves part really applies here of like, how am I really caring for my partner in this moment? And are the things that I'm saying or accusing them of or blaming them of actually protecting them? You know, and every we is so different. And not that all of our agreements are going to apply directly to your we, but there might be something in there in these agreements that could point towards something that would be helpful for you as you guys are navigating your ruptures.
Yeah, for me, the expression of that is similar. I would say that there are moments when I feel like I have my finger on the red button, the nuclear weapon button.
What is the title of the button? What does it say on the button? Exit? Panic?
No, it is, for me, it's not exit. We'll talk about that in a second. But for me, it's just like lashing out, raising my voice, calling you names, accusing you of negative intent or whatever. And where the rubber meets the road in so many relationships is whether you have the presence to not press the button.
Right. Totally.
And to use these techniques we're talking about, whether it's reflecting on a commitment that we have to protect each other in public or private, or whether it's like, okay, I need to do some somatic awareness.
For those of people who don't know what that is, maybe you can say a couple of words about somatic awareness.
Sure. So when somatic awareness, I'm talking about finding a way to first be present to your own physical experience in your body. Where am I feeling tense? Am I short of breath? Am I sweating? Can I feel myself, my fight or flight system is activated. I'm escalating inside of myself. That red button's looking really good right now.
And it can be helpful sometimes to name what's happening about your experience if you're not doing it in a blamey way. Like, you're making me feel activated.
Right. You're making me feel. That's another good one to take off the table, right?
Oh man, the blamey words and accusations. Oh, those don't go anywhere. Yeah.
And so that leads into this other piece you just brought up of threatening the exit, right? So we have another agreement, which I love because it helps me feel so much more relaxed, that we're never going to threaten the relationship. We're choosing that we will never do that. And a lot of people do that when they're fighting, right?
And the reason why that's so impactful is because if you're throwing in insecurity into the context in which you two are trying to find each other and navigate and repair, you're throwing in these threats, it's like you're throwing gas on a fire. It's not like you're having everybody feel safe. You're having people feel unsafe.
100%. And you can't really resolve anything if you're in a state of fear that your relationship might be ending.
Right, right. It's not to say that your relationship might end at some point, or maybe that's even the best thing to happen. But we're talking about doing it in the moment as a tactic to power dynamic, or something, to a tactic to throw your partner off guard, or, you know,
to shut down the conversation or end the discussion, to intimidate or bully your partner, for example.
So one of the keys that we talked about, Will, is to actually go towards regulation. Like actual, how can we get, we're obviously not regulated here. How can we become regulated in the moment? And one way that you and I do this, when one of us can be the adults and we're clear that there's some dysregulation happening, is that we point to the couch.
Yeah, we do. In route to the couch, I just want to say for myself that because I can say mean things when I'm mad, I can say cruel things, I can say mean things. One of the things that I've learned about myself, and I'm saying this because there's probably people listening who have this quality too, it's super helpful for me to just zip my lips and say, you know what? I want to say things right now, and I just need to not talk right now until I can gather myself here.
Right. So what's important in that is if we take time apart from each other, which can be really helpful, we decide in the moment when we're coming back together. Because if we leave it open-ended, then that doesn't add security into the relationship. It maybe adds insecurity. But back to the couch. Let's talk about what I mean by the couch for people who don't know that.
So one tool that a lot of couples have never thought about before is choosing to engage in regulating each other, down-regulating inside of a conflict without words. Imagine that.
Totally.
Imagine being able to affect each other's nervous system in a positive way without words.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when I'm really inflamed, I need to do that because my words are not going to make any sense. They're not going to be helpful.
They're not going to be responsible potentially and make things worse for me too. Yeah. So when we point to the couch, that means the person who is the most regulated, the adult in the room, has the other person lay down on their back on the couch. And then the regulated person lays on top of the other person, the dysregulated person, and we basically just feel the weight of the person on top of us. And as the regulated person, we ask the dysregulated person, can you feel me? And we breathe together until there's like a release of the tension. We can have a state shift. We stay there until there's a state shift.
Yeah, and you can, many people who practice this, we've found by talking to other people who try it out, you can tell there's a moment where your breath changes from like more rapid, shallow breathing to like there's often, it's sort of like, I see our dogs do this too. Sometimes when they're settling down to take a nap, there's a big breath and a big exhale. So that's, could be a clue if you want to try this out to maybe wait until you experience that and then notice how you feel there.
Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe you can access your heart just a little bit more than you weren't able to before. Now I want to get into a little bit of this way of making requests that you had brought forward earlier, Will, when we were talking about this episode. You were talking about the importance of figuring out what we need and making requests in a certain way. Can you share more about that?
Can you give me a little more to work with? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
You called them smart requests.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Not dumb requests.
Yes. Smart requests. So we're adapting the acronym SMART from, I think this comes from the business world primarily. Is that where you've run across this, Krista?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
SMART goals is what they say.
SMART goals, exactly. So when we're setting goals for ourselves or working with someone who we're managing to collaborate with them to set goals, what we want to do is ideally ask for very specific things. Here's an example of what not to do. If I'm making a request of you, I'm having the perception that you're impatient with me. And I could make a request like, hey, I want you to be more patient with me. Now, the problem with a request like that is it's not very concrete. It's not specific. It's not a behavior that I can tell if you did it or not. It's totally subjective. And so it's up to me to determine subjectively and emotionally, and we know where that's going to go if I'm triggered, that whether you're fulfilling my request or not. And smart requests are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So one of the things that people really miss is the time-bound component. I want to feel your love more.
That's a hard one. Because it's like, what does that mean?
Exactly.
What does that mean to you to feel my love more? It's hard to fulfill on.
Exactly. And it's a guessing game. And so then we often end up projecting what works for us to feel more loved onto our partner, which is not usually very effective because our partner's love language is probably really different from ours.
Right. We give them gifts when what they need is touch or something.
Exactly. Or words of encouragement or, yeah. So here's a better example of a request when I'm triggered is, I need us to take a moment to pause and breathe, and then I'll have a more concrete request for you. Are you open to that? Can we take a pause for 30 seconds?
Yeah, that feels like a really easy request, not to make necessarily, but for me to fulfill on.
Yeah. Now, this also connects in with something really important, which is understanding the owner's manual of our partner before we get into a conflict, so we know what works for them, you know?
Yes, exactly. What will usually work for them.
Usually, right.
Maybe 80 or 90% of the time.
Exactly. And it should be ideally something that's really easy, not like a complex quadratic math equation or something like...
that we have to try to remember.
Saying 12 words in a row exactly the right way every time. So the things that you're looking for are ideally behavioral interventions that are super simple, or a 3 or 4 word statement, I'm not going anywhere, I love you, or something like that. A hand on the back, you know?
So when you get activated and triggered and you're operating from your younger parts versus your adult parts, what's helpful for you in those moments from me?
One thing that works really well for me is when you say we're on the same team. That helps me a lot.
Yeah. And say it in a way that you can hear it. I'm not yelling it at you, or I'm not like, we're on the same team.
With a sarcastic tone in your voice.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But to have you really feel it, because I'm actually really honestly coming from that place. Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's usually some sort of contact, like when you point to the couch or you come closer to me with a hug.
Mm.
And then the next step is to really get my world rather than going into fix it mode, which we talk a lot about that. And it takes practice. This all takes practice with each other. But I like the pre-gaming. What helps you most when you're dysregulated? And like you're saying, Will, like having the owner's manual helps.
Yeah, it's so helpful to have these immediate, you know, 2 or 3 things to try to help your partner. Sometimes you might find yourself trying to help your partner because you're really uncomfortable with their emotions, which usually doesn't go well, by the way.
Because you're coming with an agenda to have them stop feeling uncomfortable versus being with their discomfort and your discomfort. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Good one. Another one I want to name before we wrap up is what really helps me when I feel activated and I'm coming to you with something is us speaking to the co-creation of whatever the breakdown is. So even if we don't know how the breakdown happened, what the contents are necessarily, but I'm activated. And you, if you came to me and you said something to the effect of, listen, I know that we're both contributing to this breakdown and we're both going to find out what happened and learn from this. It's kind of like the same thing as we're on the same team comment.
Right. I like that because it implies something that we feel is true in every situation is co-created. Sometimes people have a lot of reactivity when their partner is implying that they're the reason why the rupture occurred and that there's no co-responsibility. That's a big one for a lot of people. So we just prefer to work under the assumption that everything is co-created and never assume that any fight or problem was just one person.
Right. And having that operating agreement, basically, that you and I both agree we're co-creating our worlds together. When we do get into a rupture or processing cycle, to the extent that we do, we don't tend to get stuck there, fortunately, but having that as an agreement beforehand really helps us move through those ruptures a lot more quickly.
Absolutely. It's helpful to maybe expand that even one step further into a growth-oriented mindset with your partner, that if you regard your partnership as a location of growth, then you're not going to be able to hold on to the view that your partner caused a problem for very long. Because if you really are invested in growth, you're going to acknowledge that there's always something to learn for you too. But that doesn't mean that your younger parts are always going to agree with that. So that's why it's a good idea to have this agreement in the first place.
In advance, totally. Yeah, great. Anything else that you want to share before we wrap up this episode, Will?
It's a fun one to talk about. I think the quality of our conflicts often determines to a large extent what the quality of our partnerships are. So the way we do conflict is really critical in terms of the health of our relationships. And, you know, we don't get a lot of training in this, most of us. So it's really helpful for, you know, people who are on the path and trying to learn how to do this well to share and compare notes. So we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear comments or questions or observations or shares about what you're learning or, you know, what works for you.
Totally. We would so love to hear it. You can reach out to us at KristaVanderveer.com. Find us there, or you can just leave us some feedback and comments in the review section of your favorite podcast platform. We love, love, love hearing from you. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be with you next week. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much for joining us. If you found this content valuable, please follow the show and share it with your partner or other key collaborators. If the show sparked an interesting conversation based on these topics, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Instagram at Art of We Podcast.
And we'll see you next time when we explore what it means to be better together, like butter and toast, on the Art of We Podcast.